technically correct.
I'm a stylish American. I've been forcing myself to be into soccer since 2004.
With Tyler Bischoff.
Intelligence. There we go. Oh my God, what am I?
On ESPN Las Vegas.
I roll with a crew of problematic bachelors, and we call ourselves the Squad.
Fireball.
Hello, Essential Construction. We will get into some Marcus Mariota comments. There are some college football coaches that are worried we might not have a season in the fall. Also, UNLV beat Loyola Marymount last night.
Did they?
They did. Didn't see that one coming.
I don't know. All I know is I watched your stream on my laptop precariously placed on a trash can sideways while I was making cupcakes.
Vegan cupcakes.
Yes. Did not go well.
All right. So we're going to start with a construction worker at Allegiant Stadium testing positive for coronavirus. That was first reported yesterday by Vince Sapienza of Fox 5. And ultimately, this was just a matter of time. We are in a situation where Steve Sisolak has essentially banned social gatherings of 10 or more people. But construction sites with over 1,000 people have been deemed essential and construction went on. And now we have both a positive test for the coronavirus at Resorts World and Allegiant Stadium, the two major construction projects that are going on in Las Vegas right now. And that almost guarantees that more people working on that site are going to get coronavirus. Because the thing that makes absolutely no sense to me is that we are right now, we have no sports, we have no entertainment. All of that has been canceled or postponed because it's not essential. But yet construction of places that provide the entertainment that we can't have right now is deemed essential. While at the same time, social gatherings of 10 or more people are banned. But they've got over 1,000 people working at these construction sites every day. It is absurd that this is still going on. It's ridiculous that they still, both Resorts World and Allegiant Stadium, are still being built. They're still letting thousands of people come to the same area and work during the day while this is going on. I don't know how anybody can have, I don't know how you can have the governor ban social gatherings of 10 plus people and allow construction of a football stadium where there's 1,000 to 2,000 people go on. It makes absolutely no sense. The only reason that stadium could be deemed essential is because the Raiders playing a football game in September is somehow essential. That's the only reason that that could be deemed essential.
There's a Garth Brooks concert, too.
Yes. Garth Brooks and the Raiders. That's it. That's the only argument you can make for why this is essential. Why else would you have thousands of people congregating? There's no logical reason for that right now. And if you're the Raiders in the NFL, sorry, you're just going to have to figure it out. But that stadium should not be being built right now. Construction should not be ongoing at that stadium. It's a public health risk right now to have that many people gathering to build a football stadium. This isn't a grocery store where people have to get food. This isn't a hospital where people have to get treated. They're building a football stadium. How the hell is that deemed essential when all of our sports are canceled? The thing they're building that for is canceled. None of that is happening right now.
Well, no, it's the off season, so of course it's not happening right now. But when it comes, like when the season starts, they'll need that. So, you know, they should have that.
That's their mindset right now. And it's ridiculous at the moment. You're just, listen, the NFL and the Raiders just have to figure it out. All the other leagues, they're having to figure out when the hell to play their games, right? The NFL can figure out, okay, well, the Raiders don't get to play a home game for 5 weeks.
So, last year.
Yeah, basically. Like, you can
send them to London twice.
The NBA's sitting here like they might have to change their entire schedule around because they can't play right now. They're supposed to be going in the playoffs soon. Same with the NHL. But the NFL, nope, we have to build this stadium right now so that we can have a normal season in September. It's, I don't know, it's ridiculous. I don't know how it's still going. And if you remember, it was 2 weeks ago, Steve Hill, who's on the Stadium Authority Board, his quote to the RJ was, "Although we don't have any experience with the coronavirus, I cannot envision a situation where the coronavirus would impact the construction of the stadium. We're here. But he's right. It's not impacting construction because they're still going.
I mean, this is such a... we spent the money. So I kind of am like, no, screw it. But then there's, you know, we have to use people. Like, if there were robots doing it...
Of course.
That's fine.
There'd be no worry if it was robots doing it.
Why haven't... Why don't we have robots doing it?
I don't know. We don't have enough of those yet. But it makes absolutely no sense. And the companies that are in charge of the construction at the site put out a statement about it that basically said construction's not stopping. The individual that tested positive was, he didn't affect other parts of the stadium, and the area that he was working at was sanitized, right? It's like there's no way in hell that he did not impact other parts of the stadium. It's not possible. Like, for them to say that, they don't understand what's happening with this.
No, he was just the guy in charge of the bolts on the roof.
Didn't impact anything.
Yeah, it's not even, that's not even a problem.
I can't understand how that is still considered essential. It makes absolutely no sense. But moving on, Marcus Mariota talked about Derek Carr this week. He was on KHOU in Hawaii, his new situation with the Raiders, and a couple of quotes from him about Derek Carr and joining the Raiders. He said, first and foremost, this is Derek's team, and I understand that. I understand that going in. He also said, I'm going to do my best to support Derek in every possible way that I can. And along with that, I'm just going to try to become the best player that I can be and see where that takes me.
Okay, so there's a portion of that quote that's left out that I'm really interested in, but I want to hear your thoughts on these two sections.
So Mariota's coming in, not hyping up the idea that there's a quarterback competition, saying it's Derek Carr's job. It's all about the team and supporting Derek Carr because he's a starter. I don't think there's too much to that. That's what you'd expect Marcus Mariota to say. That's what I think anybody coming into this situation would say.
Is that what Ryan Tannehill said?
That's the funniest part of this, because Pro Football Talk actually went and pulled Ryan Tannehill quotes from last year when he's in almost the same exact situation. He gets traded to the Titans. He's the backup to Marcus Mariota, but he's had kind of a similar career to Mariota, so it's not like it's a clear number one and number two situation. And here's what Ryan Tannehill said. I think there's a lot of mutual respect between us. I'm going to help Marcus as much as I can. I think Marcus has done the same for me. As long as we have that mutual respect and understanding that we're aligned in trying to push each other and make each other better, ultimately, we want to help this team win. So we had Ryan Tannehill talking about we just want to do whatever we can to help the team win. We have Marcus Mariota talking about pushing each other to be the best players they can be. And we have Ryan Tannehill saying, I'm going to make Marcus or help Marcus as much as I can, while Mariota saying, I'm going to support Derek Carr in every way possible. It's the same quote. Ryan Tannehill, 6 weeks into the season, was the starting quarterback for the Titans.
My favorite quote from what Mariota said, though, was, you need a really supportive quarterback room. Like, that's a special, like, some... I'm sort of paraphrasing, obviously, but he talked about the importance of, like, how the quarterback room should be a place of respect and support. And I don't know if he meant it as a dig at Ryan Tannehill, but it certainly, like, to me came across as, like, look, I may take this guy's job, but I'm not going to do it the way he did it.
What did Ryan Tannehill do?
I don't know. But that's, like, and this could all just be me reading into quarterback speak, and he was like, I was trying to say nothing, but it sounds like he's like, look, I'm Derek's a nice guy. I'm not gonna, like, when I take his job, I'm not gonna be a bleep about it.
I wonder if Ryan Tannehill was, because I think you absolutely should. Like, last year's situation, Tannehill probably should have been a bleep about it. Like, Marcus Mariota wasn't that good. Ryan Tannehill takes over, not only has his best career year ever, somehow, some way, it still makes no sense, but the Titans made it to the AFC Championship game. Right, Daniel should have been a bleep about it.
Sorry, I that the, them making to...
It makes no sense. Yes, yes. It's fine. It is extremely stupid that that happened. It's ridiculous. But here's what I'm curious about. What Derek Carr play and what week does it happen where we start calling for Marcus Mariota? And I mean we as in you and me, because people are already doing it now, and like Derek Carr throws an incompletion in the preseason, it's going to happen. But like, when do we legitimately say, okay, it's time for Marcus Mariota?
As soon as he throws the ball away in a like
fourth and goal situation.
Either fourth and goal or like a third and 10 to get into like field goal range or something where it's like, scramble, do something, extend the play. Don't just chuck it out of bounds.
Yeah. And that's what it's going to be, because here's the thing. Derek Carr is not going to have an implosion game where he throws four picks. Like, he's not going to have that game where you're like, oh, it's obvious. You have to pull him. It's going to be a game where he goes like 23 of 38 for like 204 yards, right? It's going to be a game like that.
Good God, that might be an actual stat line from last year.
It might be. But like, where he completes, you know, 65-60% of his percent of his passes, which is good, but he doesn't throw for a ton of yards. But you're like, oh, all right, it wasn't that bad. But you're gonna look back at like four plays and you're like, what he just threw the ball away with like after 2 seconds in the pocket. Like, it's gonna be something like that. And that's where if you're Derek Carr, that's the little bit of the scary part with Marcus Mariota, because John Gruden has been talking about extending plays, like use your feet, like if Derek Carr doesn't do that like four times in one game, like he might have played well the rest of it. That could be all it takes.
And see, I'm thinking like the first time, and he does this all the time, the first time he throws it 7 yards short of the first down marker on second and third down, I'm going to be like, I don't even care that Mariota's the same guy. Just flip them out, because I can't deal with 3 yard checkdowns when you need 10 yards.
So then Mariota comes in and does it on the very next drive.
Oh yeah, no, it's the same thing. What they need is they need Rex Grossman. Like,
but here's my
question. Screw it, I'm throwing deep.
Was Ryan Tannehill throwing deep when he was in Miami? I honestly have no idea. So he was.
But he was. The problem was his deep threat was Kenny Stills.
Okay,
and that dude has frying pans for hands.
So he had a history of throwing it down the field before he
threw
got to
an incredibly pretty deep ball that would hit guys like in the back of the helmet.
Because what I'm curious with Mariota is like, can he be a different or just slightly different quarterback under John Gruden? Like, does he come in as the backup? He hears everything John Gruden says and is like, okay, I'll change the way I play in this manner to extend plays more with my feet or look for more shots down the field. Like, does that happen for a backup quarterback? I don't know. I would assume it could, but I don't know.
This is the first time, I believe, in Mariota's like life, he's ever like, wait, I'm not the starter? What I was doing wasn't good enough? Like, he walked into Oregon, basically became the starter, walked into Tennessee, was the starter. There was never a competition. This is the first time that it's like, dude, you're going to have to try harder than what you normally do. And maybe he takes that as like a, all right, I'm going to throw the vest on and we're going to go to war. Or he goes, man, being a backup's great. I don't hurt. All I do is hold this clipboard. And sometimes Derek comes to the sideline and, you know, says gosh at me.
How is Derek Carr going to mispronounce Marcus Mariota's name?
Mariota! That's what I'm talking about, baby!
Technically correct. Brought to you by Boyd Gaming.
Check out the podcast on lvsportsnetwork.com.
Hey, it's Tyler Bischoff. The best spot to place your bets is the Orleans Casino Race and Sportsbook. But if you're looking for even more convenience, download the Be Connected Sports app from beconnectedsports.com. The Be Connected Sports app makes it easy to place bets from your phone or tablet and allows you to bet during the game. So download the Be Connected Sports app and you can be just a few clicks away from betting on the biggest games whenever you want. Boyd Gaming has you covered at the Orleans Casino Race and Sportsbook or at beconnectedsports.com.
Bischoff's Briefs.
I went on the internet this week.
Oh, God.
And I found this.
Bischoff's Briefs.
There's a lot of porn piling up on the internet. It doesn't download itself.
Bischoff's Briefs.
I think I get it.
Bryce Hamilton will not enter the transfer portal.
That is according to Mark Anderson of the Review Journal. Jared turned on the wrong mic. Doing the press box 3 hours a day. It's hurting you.
Yep.
That's okay. So Bryce Hamilton, not entering the transfer portal, according to Mark Anderson of the Review Journal, neither will Mbaké Zhang. So that leaves UNLV still with one more scholarship player than scholarships available. And the two most likely scenarios are, number one, Donnie Tillman transfers out, or a freshman goes to prep school. Mike Grimala had the story from Isaac Lindsay last week that Isaac Lindsay still has no plans of going to a prep school, though that, I guess, could still happen. And Tillman seems to be the most likely answer there. If they bring in a transfer, then both of those scenarios would likely have to happen. But on Bryce Hamilton, that part is the good news, because there's been a little bit of a fear that Hamilton could get poached by a bigger school, especially if the NCAA changes their transfer rule, which would allow every player to transfer one time and not sit out, right? Everybody would get one free transfer in college basketball. And if that happens, then Bryce Hamilton could conceivably go play at a bigger, better program right away and have 2 years to play there, where he'd be, you know, guaranteed to go to an NCAA tournament or something like that. Whereas at UNLV, it's still a hope and a prayer that they make the NCAA tournament next year. And Mark Anderson did basically say, if that rule gets changed, Hamilton could actually enter the transfer portal, because you can still enter the transfer portal whenever you want. It's not like there's some deadline to enter the transfer portal. But keeping Bryce Hamilton is now the most important thing this offseason, because if you were to lose Bryce Hamilton after losing Amori Hardy,
you can't go left.
Who's left on this team? It's going to be David Jenkins and Marvin Coleman. Like, there's nobody left on the team with David Jenkins if you lose Hardy and Hamilton. So they have to keep Hamilton at this point. So you lose him, devastating offseason, and next year is just going to be disappointing.
Who is, as the roster currently sits, who is this upcoming season's, I don't want to say Marvin Coleman, but this last season's Jay Green, the season before Nick Blair, like the guy that you go, whoa, all right, guy.
Probably like Devin Tillis or Reese Brown, like one of those guys who are, they're not coming in as one of the headliners of the recruiting class. Like, they're not Nick Blake, who's the headliner of the class, but they could both find their way some playing time simply by, here's the thing that's going to be the key for whoever else plays around David Jenkins and Bryce Hamilton. Who can shoot at a respectable level and play defense?
3 and D.
That's what they need. They need guys that can space the floor and actually hit threes, and then they're going to need guys that can play defense, because Hamilton and Jenkins are not going to be that great defensively. So that could be Devin Tillis. That could be Reese Brown. Those are both sort of taller guys that could conceivably play in the front court but also play on the perimeter as a bigger wing. So it would be one of those guys who, coming in not really that hyped up, but might fit the bill as exactly what they need as a role player.
See, I'm looking for a 6'5" guy to play center.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. Do they have any of those? Marvin Coleman's going to play center to end the year.
Ooh. Magic. The Raiders re-signed Kyle Wilbur.
Another linebacker. He likely won't be playing much linebacker, though. He was the special teams captain last year, so probably a depth linebacker and playing special teams. But five linebackers on the roster now for the Raiders: Corey Littleton, Nick Kwiatkowski, Markell Lee, Nicholas Morrow, and Kyle Wilbur. I imagine they are going to try to play Littleton and Kwiatkowski as much as humanly possible, because the drop-off from Littleton and Kwiatkowski to Lee and Morrow is massive, right? Lee and Morrow were a part of a terrible defense last year, specifically a terrible linebacking group that might have been the worst in the NFL. Tahir Whitehead was one of the worst linebackers in the NFL, and the Raiders still couldn't take him off the field. So what does that tell you?
He was the best linebacker of a very bad group. So how bad is Brandon Marshall?
And, right. Yeah, that's a good question. He got cut twice by
this team.
Good
God.
So that's sort of a problem for the Raiders, because if you try to play any of the other ones, it's a huge talent drop off. If any of those two get hurt, Littleton or Kwiatkowski, that's a major problem. So, you know what I propose? Bring back Vontaze Burfict.
Doesn't he need to? Well, I guess no.
He's reinstated.
He's reinstated.
So here, the problem the Raiders had with Vontaze Burfict last
year—veteran minimum with the signing bonus.
Yes, the problem they had with Vontaze Burfict last year was that they made him the defensive captain. Like, they made him basically the most important player on the defense. So when Vontaze Burfict got suspended for the entire season, they lost their best linebacker and they lost the guy that was essentially running the defense on the field. Now you have Littleton and Kwiatkowski. If you bring in Vontaze Burfict, he'll be your number three linebacker. His responsibility is diminished. So when he ultimately gets suspended again, it's not that big of a loss for you because he was just your third linebacker. And if he's your third linebacker, he's not on the field enough to take cheap shots and get suspended. So this is where it makes sense to bring back Vontaze Burfict. You can't bring him back as your number one, but if you bring him back as your number three, not terrible.
How many linebacker snaps are the random assortment of defensive ends that this team has? How many of like linebacker snaps are they going to get?
Did they do that last year?
Well, okay, so like as of right now, they basically have two linebackers. So there's got to be a point where you're just like, okay, Max, you're the defensive end.
I mean, last year they had no linebackers and they didn't do it.
Arden Key, you're going to be the stand-up left side linebacker. If the tight end like runs, just run after it. Run after him. You won't have to tackle him.
Lights FC were drawn into Group 7 of the USL E-Cup Rocket League Edition.
All right, if you weren't paying attention
yesterday. I am so excited for this.
This is our new sport, Rocket League video game. It's soccer with cars. So Lights FC are in Group 7. The USL is doing a big World Cup type of tournament with all of their teams. Well, not all of their teams, but most of their teams. So Lights were drawn into Group 7. The other teams are FC Tucson, Indy 11, and Greenville Triumph SC.
Okay.
So Greenville and Tucson are both in the lower division. Indy 11's actually in the USL Championship, just like Lights FC. But they start next week is when the actual games will be played. And the way it's going to work, the group play is only three games. So Lights will play Tucson, Indy, and Greenville all once. And then the top two from each group advance to the knockout round, which is 16. And then you play a single elimination tournament from there.
How many games are in... like, how many sets are in a game?
I think it's best of five. Okay, I need to go check again. It might be best of three, but I think it's best of five for
everyone. These are, like, frantic games. Yeah, like, yeah. If you just go it off one, you might accidentally own goal yourself into this. Will we have a face cam on Wijnaldum coaching them up?
Oh, that is a good question. We need that. So, the guy playing for Lights FC is DJ Ocho, who is the sideline DJ. It is not any of the players. I was told, like, they don't have any players that have played Rocket League before. So it's not any of the players. So it's DJ Ocho, but the USL yesterday.
How old is this team?
The USL yesterday did like a little like they did a draw for everything and they did a little like preview for it. We're gonna try to get DJ Ocho on next week. Apparently he plays professionally. Lights FC, you're gonna win something.
That's fantastic. That's such a last recruit. We brought in a ringer. We're going to have you DJ on the side, but if this ever comes up. The NHL has suspended the NHL draft.
And the lottery, scouting combine, and the NHL awards, which were scheduled to be in Las Vegas. All of this seems fairly obvious since the season won't finish as usual. You won't have your offseason as usual. But if we sort of get ahead of ourselves just a little bit, because obviously they still have to figure out a way to restart the season if they're able to do that, when the hell does the offseason happen?
I assume it's going to be like, what, August to October?
They're not going to be finished by August. Like, that's like when they'd be playing the postseason if they're able to come back in the late summer.
I thought they were all fairly certain they're not coming back to a regular season. They might be playing like...
Even if you come back to the playoffs, it's still going to take you 2 months.
God, I love hockey.
Like, it's still going to take a long time.
It's so good.
Like, at some point, I guess it... Again, we're getting ahead of ourselves because you got to actually...
More than 50% of the teams make the playoffs. The sport is so dumb. I love it.
Like, you're going to have to figure out how to finish the season if you finish it, and then figure out when you start the next one. But, like, we're going to have, like, a 2-day off season? Like, it's going to be free agency one day and the draft the next day and let's go.
I mean, based on the current drafting model of pick a guy who was going to be the number one overall pick, but then got hurt
and can't walk.
This is not, I mean, this could work out for the Knights.
Good.
Prince might be healthy by the time the season starts. UNLV is hiring Glenn Thomas to be the quarterback's coach.
So that's according to Mark Anderson of the RJ a couple of days ago. Thomas was at Baylor the last couple of seasons under Matt Rhule. He had worked for Rhule at Temple as well. But UNLV poached him because Rhule leaves Baylor, goes to the Carolina Panthers, and Thomas went back to Temple. They hired him to be an analyst. Well, UNLV came in and said, how about you be our quarterback's coach? And he left Temple basically after being there for a month or two. Do you think he gets to move here now? Or is he just like stuck at Temple?
I mean,
are you allowed to move across the country right now?
I would hope, based on the video they put out where like the strength coach is like, this is what you're going to do with a round the house object. I don't know why I think the strength and conditioning coach talks like that. But he's a strength and conditioning coach, so I assume he does.
It's a fair stereotype.
But, like, him just be like, lift your couch! Lift your couch! I'm assuming that the quarterback's coach can, like, Skype the quarterbacks and be like, okay, you're going to do this drill. No, stop what you're... Okay, no. Feet? Okay. I'll see you in a couple months.
A quarterback's coach that cares about the quarterback's footwork?
That's incredible. I have a brief... And I literally lost it, so it's going to have to wait till the fourth segment.
Or tomorrow?
Ooh, that'd work.
Coming up next, our college football coach is afraid we're not even going to have a college football season this fall.
You're listening to Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff, brought to you by Boyd Gaming.
Oblad back to throw, looks once, now he's running to the near side, and he throws for the end zone touchdown.
You're listening to Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff.
1, 2, 3, 4, uno, dos, tres, I know you want me. You know I want you. I know you want me. You know I want you.
All right.
I know you want me. You know I want you.
There's a chance, or at least college football coaches think there's a chance, we could lose the college football season in 2020. First, we've got Bronco Mendenhall, who is the head coach at Virginia. He said this to CBS Sports, quote, we're making preparations as if we won't have spring practice. We possibly won't have players here for summer school, any session, and possibly we won't have the opportunity for anything other than fall camp to begin. Knowing that fall camp timing might even be pushed back, meaning that there could be a chance that it's not even a full schedule played this year, if football is played, period. And then we have Mack Brown, who told this to the Charlotte News and Observer. Coaches really haven't any clue. There is a fear of, would we have a season? Would we have a partial season? And what does a partial season mean? So we're talking about a sport that starts in late August as far as the games are concerned. The actual spring, UNLV would be going through spring practice right now if everything was normal. But we're talking about a sport that the games aren't played until late August, and the coaches right now are fearful that, hey, we might not have this. No college football would be devastating for the NCAA, or at least all the schools of the NCAA. My curiosity, though, is if we have multiple coaches talking about this publicly, and Mack Brown's quote seems to indicate he's talked to other coaches who are just thinking about it privately, how real is it? Like, are these just coaches just rant, they're just thinking aloud and they're like, well, everything else is canceled, so are we getting canceled too? Or have they had actual conversations where we're like, we don't think we're going to be ready to go for August and September?
I think this is one of those, well, I had to sit in a meeting with all the other coaches and the athletic director, and they said we may have to be prepared to possibly like delay or maybe not even like do our season, and so I'm scared. That's my like general thoughts are, you have administrative people going, we need to be like, we need a plan in place. And all they hear is, you're canceling my season.
Why did you give them that accent?
I, for some reason, think strength and conditioning coaches sound like this and coaches sound like this.
Okay. That seems like an unfair stereotype just to Southeastern coaches.
A lot of coaches from the Southeast.
That's true. That's probably fair. So like you said, how much are athletic directors saying we need to plan for this versus we're worried about not having this? That's sort of where my curiosity is. And we have no idea, but there are multiple coaches wondering publicly, there's a chance we don't have this. We're worried we might not have any season at all, which would be devastating to college football. I think the idea of a shortened season, I think that seems plausible at this point. Like, if there's any chance, like, the question would be, do college coaches deem like fall camp necessary? Right? Because spring practice is wiped out. It seems pretty apparent that we're going to have summer practices wiped out too. Like, I guess maybe July, conceivably, kids could be in there, but it seems like anything in June is going to be wiped out. So you're talking about August as that's when your fall camp starts and everything. Like, how realistic is it that you can just do fall camp, or if that has to get pushed back a couple of weeks, are coaches fine with we've got 10 days to prepare for the season to start, or would they prefer to push that back and do some sort of shortened season? I don't know what they would prefer. I think it would be kind of hilarious watching college football players play with 10 days worth of practice. It might be terrible. Hell, it might be dangerous.
I mean, they're all football players. They should. Well, okay. Some of them might just be like random kids from Australia that you're just like, you can kick, right? But no, they're all
Charlton Butt.
So good.
Can't wait to see. Oh, they better not take Butt's punting from us this year.
He kicks butt. No, I think honestly, conceptually, you run the Johnny Manziel playbook, basically. Like, like, legitimately, they only had 5 plays each week.
So Armani Rodgers is going to be the quarterback then, because it's going to be, hey, when things don't work out, which is going to be a lot run.
That's perfect. Legitimately because, well, it was because Johnny Manziel couldn't memorize anything. They literally were just like, we got 5 plays. So if I put number 1 up, we're running play number 1. If we're running play number 2, and they were written on his, like,
hey, they beat Alabama.
Wrist. Yeah, exactly.
You
so
need
like
5
this,
plays to beat Alabama.
This could be fun.
It could be.
Oh my gosh. If they like run the veer, I would be so excited. Oh, Armani Rodgers running a straight pitch.
I don't think Marcus Arroyo is going to adjust his whole offense to run the veer.
It's only like 7 plays.
Yeah.
That's not adjusting your offense. That's just installing an offense.
I think there's too much pride to just turn to the veer. Although it would be great if UNLV won the Mountain West running the veer. Like, well, we only had 10 days to practice, so we put in the simplest offense we could, and it worked.
We literally have 1 passing play, and it seems to work every time because they have 9 guys going, who's he going to pitch it to? When's he going to pitch it?
I mean, Air Force's quarterback almost always leads the Mountain West in quarterback rating. They complete 3 passes a game, but all of them are for 72 yards.
So, yeah, I think they could. I think the bigger concern to me is the Texas Southern like problem of like there are entire athletic departments that rely on their football team getting its bleep kicked.
The UNLV is one of them. That is a curiosity, because if you do a shortened season, when I heard shortened season, the first thing I thought of, well, just cancel all the non-conference games. Everybody plays their conference schedule, and that's your shortened season. But
you'd have to cut swimming.
Yeah, like, well, I might have to do that anyways. I think tomorrow we're going to get into the how much money schools are losing from the NCAA tournament being canceled. Like,
oh,
it's
wow.
It's yeah. not it's not pretty. It's not going to be good for a lot of schools. So, like, again, if this goes in, if we have to have any sort of shortened football season, like, that's going to be a nightmare for a lot of schools, even the Power 5 schools, who normally were like, they got plenty of money. They'll still probably have plenty of money, but you start taking away football games from schools in the SEC and the Big Ten, like, all of a sudden, what are they doing anymore? Like, that's their big advantage. So, but that to me was the first thing as far as a partial season that jumped out was, well, the smartest way to do it would be to cut non-conference games and everybody plays their conference schedule, and then you have your conference champions and figure out your playoff from there.
And see, my thoughts are cancel the crossover games. Like, only play people on, like, whatever your side of the conference is.
Yeah, I mean, the Big 12 doesn't have divisions, though, so it wouldn't quite work for everybody. They'd have to make up 5-team divisions, I guess. You could do that. But yeah, I mean, again, it's that. But that, though, becomes, I think, too complicated.
Okay.
Because if in this scenario, we're presumably saying the first month of college football, September, is wiped out. So you're starting 4 weeks, 5 weeks late than usual. So if you're going to play any non-conference games, you've got to somehow reschedule, like for UNLV this year, they've got to somehow reschedule a game with Arizona State.
We bring back JV football. So we have a junior varsity game on Friday, and then we have the other one on Saturday for the first like 3 weeks.
Who plays in the JV games?
I don't know. The backups.
Why? Wait, what's the point of this?
So that way we can keep the regular schedule. So like both teams send their backups to play on Friday, and then whoever you were supposed to play on Saturday, you play with your regular team.
I'm very confused as to what you're getting at here. I don't see how this solves anything. So Arizona State's backups are going to play UNLV's backups on Friday.
Correct.
And then UNLV starters are going to play UNLV start or Arizona State starters on Saturday.
No, they're going to play whatever the next game is.
Oh, I gotcha. Okay. That seems dumb.
Yeah, it's okay. An idea from me. What did you like? Were you expecting brilliance?
I mean, I was expecting a little bit more thought out than that.
No.
Okay.
Not at all.
Never mind. All right. What about this idea though? Because Pro Football Talk wrote about this too, and his scenario was, I don't know why I call Mike Florio Pro Football Talk, but Mike Florio wrote about this. His scenario was,
I think Peter King technically works for him too. So, you know.
Okay. All right. His scenario was, or his hypothesis was, if for whatever reason we can't have football this fall, or at least college football, his theory was we could still have the NFL, but with no fans. And the idea was college football needs the actual attendance more than the NFL. The NFL could become a made-for-TV, basically, setup. And his idea was you test all of the players and staff and coaches that have to be there, play with no fans, and you're good to go. Whereas in college football, maybe, you know, Alabama can afford to test their entire program every week, but, like, UNLV can't afford to test their entire program every week. So to me, that sounds stupid. Like, there's no way that happens. Like, you can't have if the country's still somehow in a lockdown and we don't have football, we're not going to have, well, we're going to test every NFL team every single week so we can play games without fans. Like, there's no way that works by then.
All I was going to say is that baseball teams have been running on the we don't need fans in the stands idea for years.
Only like 12 of them.
Only most of the ones in Florida. The other thing I was going to say is that Atlanta would have a huge advantage because they already pipe in crowd noise. So it would be like, oh man, playing Atlanta, it's like a real game.
So do the Golden Knights. They'll be good to go, according to Brad Marchand. Coming up next, UNLV beat Loyola Marymount by 30 points last night.
Get in touch with the show on Twitter at @Bischoff_Tyler.
All because this fool was harassing them, trying to play the boy like he's saccharine, but ain't nothing sweet about how I hold my gun. 99 problems, but a bitch ain't one. If you're having girl problems, I feel bad for you, son. I got 99 problems, but a bitch ain't one. Hit me.
You're listening to Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff.
What was that?
That was Las Vegas radio legend Dave Koken rapping Jay-Z.
I just want to say that rejoin is perfect because you didn't put any music under it.
Yeah.
We don't, like, it's just a dry straight into me having to respond to Dave Koken.
I was hoping that it would just be you laughing in the background or just utter befuddlement.
How old is that?
I have no idea.
Okay, so you just dug that up.
Right.
Okay, excellent.
The more stuff I find, the weirder the show's going
to
get.
Jared does not need to be in here longer than an hour. Things get bad. All right. So, last night on Twitter, we watched UNLV and Loyola Marymount. Thanks to everybody that came in and tuned in. That was by far the most fun game UNLV has played in the NCAA tournament. 131-101 was the final score. One note, Loyola Marymount, worst defensive strategy I've ever seen in my life. They pressed the entire game, essentially, which isn't that bad, but the way they pressed was just all out press the entire time. They just had four guys on the other side of half court trying to trap the ball. All UNLV had to do to break it, and all they did pretty much every possession, was just send two guys past half court and throw a long pass before the trap actually got there. And then they had a 2-on-1. Every time. Every time. It's the dumbest press I've ever seen in my life.
I remember I was watching the stream, and I would just hear you go, What are you doing?
It's the dumbest thing I've ever
it's
seen.
It's a 4-on-1.
Yeah. Like, if they... Okay. Conceivably, that would work.
Oh, sorry. I was going to ask, who should have been a quarterback for you and LP?
Oh, Larry Johnson. Yes, Larry Johnson made a pass from the corner by his own basket. Perfect pass all the way down to the paint on the other side for a layup. I don't even know who made the layup. That's not important. The pass was perfect. This is the best pass anyone in a UNOVA jersey has thrown ever.
Randall Cunningham.
Nope, better than anything Randall Cunningham's thrown. It was perfect pass. Unbelievable from Larry Johnson. But, like, you would conceivably run that type of press if you were just significantly bigger and more talented than your opponent, because you're just going to steal every pass and get a free layup all the time, right? Like, that's what you would do if you're in middle school and you've got two kids that hit puberty first, right? Like, that's what you would do. You guys just press and you're going to steal it because they're tiny.
Is it supposed to be like permanent cherry picker? Is that like...
No, they just wanted to get
no,
a ton
I'm
of
saying,
steals.
Is that the level of like...
Kind
we're
of,
talking.
Kind of. They just want to get as many steals as they possibly could. But the problem is, when you're playing a competent team, you just have to throw it up the floor and boom, 2-on-1. Every single time.
Oh man, there's four guys. Wait, there's my guy.
Yeah. Every time. Makes no sense. But we had an important revelation from 1990 here. First off, Loyola Marymount was playing like the Warriors 25 years before the Warriors and Steph Curry were playing like that. Shoot threes, ton of threes off the dribble. Doesn't matter. Just put them up, right? The main difference, Loyola Marymount, terrible on defense, whereas the Warriors, they were a dynasty because they were always one of the best defensive teams when they won the championship.
They had a guy that was 6'6 who could guard 1 through 5.
Yeah, so like that's the main difference there. But on the three-point shooting, this was the fourth year that the three-point line was used in college basketball, right? They had a segment at halftime where they talked about how three-pointers were being taken more and more, and they had coaches complaining. It was Jim Herrick, who was the coach at UCLA at the time, who complained that everybody wants to take threes. Like, it's the same complaints we're hearing 30 years later about the three-point line, that everybody wants to shoot them. Everybody thinks they can make them, right? Same complaints. So we've been complaining about the same thing for 3 decades in basketball. But the best part of that entire game was the color analyst Billy Packer. At one point, he's talking about Loyola Marymount launching all these threes, and he said 33% from three is the same as 50% from two. That is the entire key to analytics saying mid-range jumpers are bad. That's it. Like, that's the formula. That's the golden moment for why mid-range jumpers are bad. Because 33% from three is as good as 50% from two, and nobody shoots 50% on mid-range jumpers. In college basketball, for example, the average three-point shot goes in 33% of the time. Right? It dropped a little bit because they moved the line back, but 33% of the time this year. Meanwhile, mid-range jumpers never go in at 50%. This year, they went in at 37% of the time. So if you do the quick math here, take 100 mid-range jumpers, and we'll take the best team in the country last year. They hit 46%. 100 mid-range jumpers at 46%, 92. That gives you 92 points on 100 shots. You take 100 threes and your average, 33%?
99!
That's better.
That's a bigger number.
So an average three-point shooting team is better than the best mid-range shooting team. If you do it on the average mid-range team, you're talking about 74 points from those mid-range jumpers compared to 99 from the mid-range threes for an average
shooting
team.
You can be a slightly below average three-point team and still beat that team.
Significantly better. But what I don't understand is Billy Packer said this in 1990. He had the key in 1990 that said, stop shooting mid-range jumpers. And it took us 25 years to figure it out?
I prefer my math, which is, what if I told you there's a shot that's literally worth 50% more than the one you're taking?
Why did it take so long? Why? Like, I don't understand why it took so long.
It's literally like, would you rather hit a home run with the bases empty or with a guy on base?
Because here's the thing. I just assumed for the longest time nobody kind of, like, put that together. That, hey, if I shoot a much lower percentage from three, it's going to be worth a way more points in the long run than it is from two, because it's worth more points. Like, I just assume nobody put those two thoughts together. Billy Packer did it in 1990 on air. So I assume other people did it too. And it took us this long. Well, I guess Loyola Marymount figured it out, but it took everybody else this long to realize, hey, don't shoot the mid-range jumpers. They're bad.